For the Climate Discussion Nexus, I'm John Robson, with the latest readout video from our Wednesday Wake Up newsletter, and a hello to the good people in Czechia, who've made it number 31 on our list of all-time views by jurisdiction internationally. And, speaking of international jurisdiction, we follow up with a sneer at the so-called International Court of Justice, which is none of the above, and at all the people who think that its climate ruling was worth the paper it was probably no longer printed on. And this item's a twofer, because it touches on the widespread delusion in certain quarters that the key to good public policy is good intentions, an error superbly assessed in Thomas Sowell's A Conflict of Visions. Consider the Euronews.Green headline, quote, UN's top court says healthy environment is a human right in historic climate ruling, end quote. Historic? Try hysterical. You know, in the old days, 1066 and all that, the Battle of Hastings was historic not because William of Normandy said he would go and conquer England, but because he actually did go and conquer it, in much the same way that Hitler's conquest of Britain was not historic because he didn't. But now, quote, experts say the non-binding advisory opinion could mark a turning point in international climate law, end quote. On that could and experts say, we can't resist sharing the headline, quote, proof of aliens possible by Christmas, say experts, end quote. But what's really ridiculous here, apart from trying to bind us with non-binding, is their assumption that European politicians have not yet done the good thing on climate because of insufficient motivation rather than because they didn't know how. How anyone can even read newspapers, let alone write them, and not be aware that politicians have been painfully, even ear-splittingly sincere about their determination to fix the weather for at least a quarter century now is a mystery to us. Almost as deep as the mystery as to why after a non-court issues a non-ruling saying, hey all you politicians, fix the weather or we'll talk again, so many people think they'll suddenly not just want to do it, but that they'll suddenly know how to do something they didn't know how to do 5 minutes ago. Bloomberg Green Daily chimes in with, quote, in a first-of-its-kind ruling, the International Court of Justice said on Wednesday that countries have an obligation to do all they can to keep global warming below the 1.5 Celsius goal outlined by the Paris Agreement and could face consequences if they don't, end quote. And Climate Home News trails, quote, World Court puts fossil fuel backers on notice, end quote. But this case isn't a precedent for anything in anyone's legal system, nor is it independently enforceable, so it's just more pious wishes in a wig. And yes, a major reason that climate policy is so futile is that it's made by people who honestly think all you need is will. Whereas in fact, you often need won't, and whatever you need, you often get can't, with and without an apostrophe. And speaking of confusion about rules and reality, the New York Times has the vapors of the news that the EPA, quote, is said to have drafted a plan to end its ability to fight climate change. According to two people familiar with the draft, it would eliminate the bedrock scientific finding that greenhouse gas emissions threaten human life by dangerously warming the planet, end quote. Now, leaving aside quibbles about whether the Environmental Protection Agency actually could do it if it tried, the key point is that these journalists seem to know as little about science as they do about law. That piece began, quote, the Trump administration has drafted a plan to repeal a fundamental scientific finding that gives the United States government its authority to regulate greenhouse gas emissions and fight climate change, end quote. But of course, the Trump administration, or the United States Congress, or indeed the United Federation of Planets, can no more repeal a scientific finding than it can make one. Scientific findings are hypotheses that withstand repeated empirical tests. They are not edicts from a bureaucracy, a legislature, or the Ministry of Truth. Despite which, the piece babbles on, quote, the proposed Environmental Protection Agency rule rescinds a 2009 declaration known as the Endangerment Finding, which scientifically established that greenhouse gases like carbon dioxide and methane endanger human lives, end quote. But again, this declaration can no more establish that greenhouse gases endanger human lives than a legislature could establish the value of pi at 3.2. And speaking of politics, Blacklock's reporter exposes a Canadian federal government briefing note that says the peasants are too dumb to notice the government hiking the price of gas, which rather undermines the argument that doing so will cause them to reduce their consumption. According to a May 8th Agriculture Department briefing note, Clean Fuel Regulations, quote, given the variability in fuel prices paid at the pump, increases in fuel costs due to the Clean Fuel Regulations may not be noticeable by most consumers, including farmers, end quote. Well, somebody's a rube. And speaking of political naivete, Canary Media is shocked that, quote, in Ohio, oil and gas industry is steering new carbon capture bill, end quote. So, repeat after us. If you give government, and particularly a specific agency, enormous capacity to help or hurt vested interests, those vested interests will devote enormous resources to agency capture. The All You Need Is Love crowd really need to hit the books, particularly the economics books. But meanwhile, pinch us. Canada's CBC, of all outlets, just ran a story that, quote, thriving or dying, how the heat wave is impacting local crops. The weather this summer is affecting the growing season for local farmers, but some say the heat hasn't been all bad news, end quote. We're not startled by the finding. Canada's growing season is dangerously short because we're a cold country, but we never thought to see it from our state broadcaster. And speaking of admitting things, Scientific American enthuses that, quote, superheated gold defies entropy catastrophe limit, overturning 40-year-old physics. Physicists superheated gold to 14 times its melting point, disproving a long-standing prediction about the temperature limits of solids, end quote. So, it's good when science is challenged, and nobody should try to enforce orthodoxy and suppress deniers? No, not on climate. But let us try anyway. Because in a remarkable burst of irresponsible ignorance, a leading Canadian bank just warned major investment clients that a great wind will soon blow away their money. In a report focused on hurricanes, Scotiabank said, quote, an above-normal season is on the way, equity performance and sector company exposure, end quote. And the key offending passage read, quote, hurricane activity in the Gulf of America, Gulf of Mexico, and off Mexico's west coast is perhaps the most important natural disaster risk for investors focused on the region. Not only does the risk last 6 months each year, but the frequency and intensity of these storms are increasing due to climate change, end quote. What? You might suppose that before writing such a thing, they would at least have taken a quick look at the actual tally of hurricanes thus far this year, as opposed to some bureaucrat's prediction. And if they had, including checking the Climate Discussion Nexus site before believing alarmist propaganda, they'd know we've had the quietest start since 1970. And you might also suppose, especially at a bank, that they'd also check out what Roger Pilkey Jr. and others have cataloged in detail, which is that damage from natural disasters is not getting worse at all, and therefore it can't be getting worse because of climate change or anything else, including toe of frog. It is rising nominally because there are more people in the world, and they're richer, and because of inflation. But as a share of total wealth, it's falling. And that has real-world consequences, including financial ones. Meanwhile, if someone's waving their hand saying, never mind economics, what about the human cost? The Manhattan Contrarian also just wrote that, quote, new record set for deaths from climate and weather disasters, end quote. Gotcha? Well, yes and no, because, quote, the first half of 2025, January to June, has seen the fewest number of deaths from climate and weather disasters of any first half year this century, end quote. In case you download the Scotiabank report now, they seem to have responded to a complaint by adding the anodyne, quote, though there is debate within the scientific community, end quote, but it links to an MIT technology review item that's almost as useless as the original passage, insisting that, quote, scientists have found that warming temperatures are causing stronger and less predictable storms, end quote, before admitting that we don't know if we're getting worse storms because, quote, historical records are limited, end quote, and because the models disagree about whether we're going to. But we do know, as would Scotiabank if they spent more time with us and less with Greenpeace, that there has been no increase in the number of cyclones worldwide or in their ferocity recently. And that the usual suspects have predicted a worse than usual season and been wrong a lot, including in 2024 and in 2023. Now, of course, as with everything, half of hurricane seasons are below average. But assuming that the bank employs statisticians as well as activists, it should have known, especially because we have explained it, that the more natural variability there is in a phenomenon, the longer the series of reliable data you need to detect whether there's a trend. A and hurricane seasons are highly variable. Indeed, to the point that, whether you like it or not, you'd need centuries of careful reporting to detect a trend. Whereas a few weeks of indoctrination can make you declare one without grounds. In the newsletter, we also say that we were intrigued by a headline, quote, "Earth's most dangerous glacier is gaining ice, and scientists can't explain why," end quote. And we weren't only intrigued by the question of how a piece of ice gets dubbed Earth's most dangerous glacier, especially because it's not the Thwaites' Doomsday Glacier, whose long-predicted swoon into the Antarctic Ocean will trigger fatal sea level rises, nor the Siachen Glacier, Lolofan Glacier, Tarim Shehr Glacier, or all three together, prime spots for people tumbling into crevasses and not being able to get out again. Instead, the Siachen is Earth's highest battleground between India and Pakistan, and it's seen around 2,000 soldiers die, mostly from exposure to cold, not munitions. But of course, the big thing that intrigued us about that headline is, "And scientists can't explain why," despite which journalists apparently can, or think they can, rushing to assert that, quote, "these glaciers, located in one of Earth's most remote and contested regions, are gaining ice volume despite the warming temperatures that are threatening glaciers worldwide," end quote. So, in the wacky world of climate science, things nobody can explain are settled, and glaciers gaining ice mass doesn't mean they're not vanishing. And another thing, the Washington Post reports that, quote, "solar panels and windmills are the fastest growing sources of power in the United States, accounting for 80% of new energy being added to the grid. Yet Republican lawmakers and Trump administration officials remain intent on stifling clean energy progress in America, even as China races ahead," end quote. Ha ha, what dumbos. Not that China isn't in fact building coal plants at a massive pace, or that the reason wind and solar account for 80% of new energy being added to the American grid is that politicians there have been subsidizing the green energy transition a lot more single-mindedly than their Chinese counterparts, while stifling the development of almost everything else through pale green NIMBYism. In the newsletter, we then continue our new Have It Both Ways series with a look at Chinese locusts. And if you're tempted to say, no thanks, we sympathize. As we've said in previous entries, as nature lovers, we love nature, including birds and forests. But not locusts. Especially not when they devour everything in biblical swarms. Which has been a big issue in China for millennia. Try blaming that one on climate change, especially in the wetlands around its large Yellow and Yangtze river systems. Indeed, in 2007, scientists published a remarkable data set extending over 1,000 years in which Chinese officials had recorded the annual abundance of migratory locusts. Quote, "linking these records with temperature and precipitation reconstructions for the period 957 to 1956, we show that decadal mean locust abundance is highest during cold and wet periods," end quote. So, will warming and drought mean fewer locust outbreaks? Heck no. A 2009 study said, quote, "according to analysis for interannual time series during the past 100 years, the most severe locust outbreak years were in the warm, dry years with warm, dry summers and warm, wet winters," end quote, again, in the Yellow and Yangtze River basins. Which the authors say suggests, quote, that greenhouse-affected climate warming would increase the severe locust outbreaks in the area, end quote. So, here come the locusts, both ways. And speaking of religion, humans have created a long list of myths about the sun, from the Aztecs to the Zulus. But all of these cults were swept away, first by the rise of monotheism, and then by modern science. Except the climate cult's belief that solar panels are the cheapest way to generate electricity. But now a team of missionaries are arriving at the tribal grounds with chapter and verse in hand. Specifically, the energy bad boys, who look not just at the nominal cost of installation, but at the cost of energy resources, quote, providing a constant 1,000 megawatts of power over a 5-year period, accounting for historic hourly fluctuations in wind and solar capacity factors, end quote. See, conventional sources like nuclear and fossil can run 24/7 and deliver power whenever it's needed. To give solar and wind the same reliability requires that you add energy storage, aka batteries, which are monstrously expensive, and then that you overbuild the generating facilities so they can charge the batteries when the sun is shining or the wind is blowing, at which point their true cost seems to be 30 times the load requirement. Yes, 30 times. Finally, as usual from the CO2science.archive, unlike many of the plants that are in that archive, Lemna gibba L, or swollen duckweed, is not disparaged as invasive, despite spreading easily on many continents and having a name that would not be appropriate for a Western movie sidekick. We don't even know why it's called swollen, because it's so small. But in 1985 and 1990, experiments showed that an extra 300 parts per million of CO2 boosted its growth by an average of 47%. So, swollen duckweed will continue to swell as long as there's more CO2 in the air. For the Climate Discussion Nexus, I'm John Robson, and I thumb my nose at the International Court of Justice.
That's right.